Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnire, and I'm joined this week by Ryan Ray, who joined us a couple weeks ago with Nick Warren to talk about Jacksonville a little bit. And now Ryan is back with us. And Ryan, you have been elected the chairman of, or the chairperson of, the Leon County Democratic Party. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was good to talk about with you a while back, and I appreciate the congratulations. Very excited. Lots of work to do here in Leon County to advance Democrats and Democratic agenda.
So, with that in mind as a talking point, let's talk a little bit about where things have gone the last 30 years or so for Florida Democrats. We did a similar podcast during the campaign season with Dave Trotter about Florida Republicans and the transition from the Pinellas County Florida Republicans, the Pinellas County style Bill Cramer, Jack Eckert type Republicans, to through the halfway houses that happened in between, and eventually, obviously, the DeSantis Republicans. So, yeah, very interesting transition, and one that is quite it has been quite complicated in terms of the Republicans kind of moving away from their traditional base in this state and reorienting themselves. So, at the same time, the Democratic Party has picked up some of those people who the Republican Party shed, including Charlie Crist, who I think was the major topic of conversation in that podcast, as being typical of what you've traditionally called, Ryan, the St. Pete Times Republican, who then became a Democrat. But the Democratic Party has contracted in terms of its statewide vote share in that period, with that culminating recently with Crist's wipeout loss, obviously, for governor as the gubernatorial nominee. Let's talk a little bit about the Democratic Party in this period, because the Democratic Party obviously was the dominant political party in Florida from the Reconstruction era until the 1990s. Obviously, a little wobble in the late 60s that we've talked about frequently on this podcast in the past with Robert Buccellato. And certainly the 1986 election was a very mixed election, but really bad at the governor's level, and lost a ton of state Senate seats that year for the Democrats, but generally solid. And then the 1990 Childs McKay election was an election that put a Democrat back in the governor's mansion and put us in a position where you had the Democrats controlling both houses of the legislature. Still, the majority of the statewide cabinet was Democratic at that point. Although, of course, you did get two Republicans in the statewide cabinet in the late 80s, which was the beginning of the shift. And so in the early 1990s, Ryan, the Democrats are the dominant party, not the dominant party, but they are still the majority party in Florida and state government, even though they had lost the presidential election in this state by huge margins throughout the 1980s, three straight elections, which the Republicans carried the state by 17 points or more in a presidential election. 1992, George H.W. Bush is reelected is not reelected, right? Bill Clinton wins statewide, but he still carries Florida by 2 points, but that's a margin that went from 22 points in 1988 to 2 points in 1992, which ushered in this era of incredible competitiveness at the presidential level. But at the same time as that was happening, we began to see a shift towards the Republicans at the state level.
That's part of what made Lott Tiles' 1994 re-election defeat of Jeb Bush probably the biggest, most impressive victory for Democrats in the modern era.
Yeah, so 94 was a year also that was a major Republican wave year nationally.
The Contract with America, gingrich revolution year.
Yeah. And the Republicans picked up 8 seats in the state house that day, the same day as that gubernatorial election, flipped the state Senate permanently, moved it to 21-19, and it's raced away since then. Although the Democrats got it down to 23-17, actually, after the 2018 election, and now it's 28-12, which is unbelievable when you think about
it. Pretty wild.
Yeah. So Bill Clinton wins the state in 96 by 6 points. Yet that same day, the Democrats lose the state house. It goes to 61-59 Republican. And there was a collapse in the Democratic Party infrastructure in the state during that period. And what we saw, and maybe you can speak to this, Ryan, as you're picking up the pieces in the wake of all of this in Leon County. What we saw was a lot of establishment Democrats who were transactional and had their livelihoods tied to the state legislature or tied to something around state government begin to hedge their bets. And in fact, in 98, stab Buddy McKay in the back, effectively, and help Jeb Bush become elected governor. And we've had this sort of drift towards Republican dominance of state government since, and the people around state government all becoming Republicans.
Yeah. Once it went pretty completely. And I was just going to mention, before you did the 98, you see a lot of prominent Democrats in South Florida and elsewhere who are still prominent, still around today, who earlier on in their careers kind of made a, I think, really decisive switch and decision to not support Buddy McKay in the 98 election, right in the wake of Lawton Childs' untimely death, and support Jeb Bush, who was, of course, swept into power in what basically marked the beginning of the end of the Democratic period of government in the 90s. It all went out quickly. You've seen the Republicans build really resilient, growing, seemingly, invulnerable majorities year over year, but really it all began with just that collapse right in there in the late 90s.
Yeah, so
We've never recovered to a point even halfway back to that.
No, not even close. And the thing that makes it so dramatic is that a lot of these South Florida Democrats that made the decision to support Jeb Bush in 1998 over Buddy McKay had these very petty grievances. Oh, well, Lawton Childs had vetoed one of my appropriations, or there was anger among the police unions about a veto by Childs there, or there was other issues in terms of internal fights within DECs and local Democratic parties. And the willingness of Democrats who, and I guess this was an era where a lot of them were facing term limits, because term limits was kicking in 2000, and some of them, this was a factor, right? They're looking for appointments, etc. We're looking at a period in time when they went ahead and handed the state over to Jeb Bush. Now, he probably wins in 98 anyway, right? But Florida kind of bucked national trends. In fact, very surprisingly, in 98, the Democrats flipped the governorship in Alabama. Roy Barnes was able to build on Del Miller's narrow win in 94 in Georgia and win by double digits against Guy Milner in Georgia. And then the governorship in South Carolina flipped the same day also to the Democrats. So it was a good day for the Democrats in most of the South and a very bad day in Florida. And so
we've seen that before.
We've seen that very recently. But what I think happened was you had a lot, and this is when Florida begins to develop its own distinct politics, which is sort of resistant to national trends, which is where you have these Democrats that have such grievances based on local issues or appropriations, or the thought that they are going to want to be friendly with Jeb Bush because they're going to be looking for to do something in the year 2000, that they threw in with him. And in fact, even those who supported Buddy McKay, I think there was very tepid support, right? They didn't give the effort in that 98 campaign that they would have in the past for Democratic candidates. And the party never quite recovered. So then you get to Bush v. Gore in 2000. You have effectively an election that is, to put it diplomatic, since this is a nonpartisan podcast, we will say that that there was a Bush was fortunate to carry the state, because between the 3,300 votes for Pat Buchanan in Palm Beach County, most of which I can speak to this directly, I was on the ground that day, and I was one of the people working for the Democratic Party, trying to get people to not double punch their ballots. Between the 3,300 votes for Buchanan, the spoiled overvotes in Palm Beach County, and then the issues in Duval County, it is likely, and the Miami Herald did an audit of this after, right, and the Washington Post did an audit of this after, that Al Gore actually probably would have won the state by several thousand votes. I think, really, at least by 10,000 votes. But
there are irregularities, to be
yes,
sure.
Yes, yes. But you're still talking about a 50-50 election, or 49-49 election. So to go from that in 2000 to the 2002 governor's race, where Jeb Bush wins by 13 points, is pretty extraordinary. And it was very funny, Ryan, because in Tallahassee throughout 2001 and 2002, I was living in Tallahassee then, there and working for Democratic Party candidates and entities those 2 years, it felt like things were swinging back, and that we were rebuilding a Democratic Party around, you know, the people who had who were tied to the legislative process, who were thrown in with the Republicans, who had been Democrats, who had been Charles Democrats or Graham Democrats or Bill Gunter Democrats, whatever they were gone. But it felt like there was a rebuilding core infrastructure, and then the 2002 election happened, and it was a stutter.
Yeah, 2002 on is one of the many big stinging defeats in the recent history of the Florida Democratic Party, but it's one I think that's probably not well understood enough. But yes, that's true. That was kind of where that turning point was cemented.
Yeah, and so then in 2004, you have the narrow loss of Betty Castor to Mel Martinez. But here's the period, like the Renaissance from 2006 to 2012. You don't make the substantive gains in the legislature that you may have wanted to, given how things were going in that period. But you did have, in 2006, Bill Nelson win the Senate race by over 20 points over Catherine Harris, who was
a good year nationally.
Yeah, very good year nationally. You had in 2008 Obama win the state. You had in 2010 Alex Sink vastly overperform compared to national trends in a very bad Democratic year. And then you had, in 2012, Bill Nelson get Obama carry the state again, and Bill Nelson break a record for the most votes for any elected official, votes for anyone in the history of the state of Florida, as well as every single ballot initiative that Democrats wanted passed in the state, on the Constitution passed, and the ones that Democrats didn't want passed didn't pass. It was very much a Democratic kind of wave election with seats that were left on the table at the legislative level without question, but the Republicans didn't have many successes. And so you get to 2012, and it feels like, which ironically enough, that's when you and I first met, we're on the cusp of an era where the state realigns and then things come unglued again. And this is where you're picking up the pieces in Leon County. There have been a lot of institutional Democrats there, and this was what happened in 98 also, that for whatever reason felt like it was in their best interests to keep close to Republican entities or to big business or to the special interests in this state, which meant they were actively working to undermine Democratic candidates, particularly the Democratic candidates nearer to the top of the ticket. We'll put it that way. And we've seen Democrats, or those people who were associated with the Democratic Party, who may have even been part of the successes between 2006 and 2012, join with the Republicans, or join with Republican-leaning entities to create a situation where the Democrats are once again struggling.
The locus of power has just floated so much in that direction, sort of effectuated by those big turning point elections that you just
opposite. It rarely goes the other direction. You don't see too many Republicans making nice with Democrats to curry favor with Democrats higher up on the federal ballot, et cetera. But yes, no, I mean, it's gotten to the point where Tallahassee and the mechanisms of state government power are basically kind of appendages of a large Republican apparatus that commands a lot of crossover respect and support from Democrats all across the state, and it's a big structural issue.
So let's talk a little bit about redistricting, since we discussed that with Nick Warren a few weeks ago. So another big part of the problem, going back to 2002, is the willingness of Democrats to make deals with Republicans to get their own districts, and to get districts drawn that will be incumbent protection districts. So that was a problem in 2002. In 2012, I think there was a problem where the Republicans in the House drew more Democratic districts, maybe than they needed to, quite honestly. But that there was this real unwillingness to go out and get other seats. There was this desire to protect incumbents, and I think that the same thing could be said of 2022, when the Democrats on a map which had 47 seats that voted for Joe Biden just 2 years earlier came back to Tallahassee with 35 seats. So there are 12 Biden DeSantis seats now in the state house, which is a really an extraordinary number when you think about this being an era where ticket splitting really isn't happening.
No, you're right. I know that you saw some good efforts like in 2006, I think, with Steve Shale at House Victory, picking up seats and really expanding the board. In intervening years, yeah, there's been for different sets of reasons, there's been an unwillingness to make the main focus to be expanding the board at all times. So I feel like we pulled punches and avoided running people in seats where we probably should have, and that does take a toll over time.
Yeah, I think in the case of 2006 and 2008 with Steve Shale, you had him, one, expanding the board, but two, also looking at places where Democrats had been successful at some time in the point in the past and trying to recruit. And he didn't win all the races, right? But he won enough, and he expanded the board, and he made the Republicans spend in some other areas. And I should give Steve Shale all the credit. He gets most of it, but there were people who worked with him at House Victory and the Democratic leaders, Dan Gelber, etc., that got this. Now, more recently, you've had a focus on incumbent protection exclusively,
yeah,
to where there's no real effort to expand the board. So 2012 is a great example of this. We said the Democrats came back with 44 seats on a day that Nelson had a record number of votes for any candidate running for office in the state of Florida.
Yeah,
and
that's malpractice.
Yeah, and Obama won the state, right. And it was because there were a number of seats where the Democrats got 48 or 49% of the vote, but the party hadn't targeted the seat. And some of these were against Republican incumbents.
The Democratic House delegation could have sniffed and probably should have the rare air of, like, 50 seats or something.
Yeah.
And not getting that and not having that presence felt in whatever it is, 6 or 10 districts there, has a real effect in terms of just depressing turnout and not getting people in the habit of voting for Democrats for the legislature.
Yeah, I can give you 4 seats right off the bat from 2012. So Ross Hancock, your old friend, ran down in Coral Gables. Jeffrey Doc Solomon ran in the Coconut Grove area of Miami. You had Karen Wetzel running against John Wood in Polk County in Lakeland, and then you had Eileen Game running against Mike LaRosa, I believe it was, in Osceola County. All of these Democrats got somewhere like between 48.5 and 49.5% of the vote, and lost seats to Republican incumbents in Republican-held seats. That were, I think LaRosa was not an incumbent, but that was an open seat. But still, very, very close races that any amount of resources poured in, any little bit of party resource would have gotten those candidates over the line. So then you're looking at 48. And then I think maybe in a seat in Volusia also that had a similar circumstance, if I remember correctly. And then obviously there was the race against Keith Perry that year too in the Gainesville area. So yeah, you're right there. I've just come offhand. I don't have any notes in front of me, by the way. I'm doing this by memory. I've just gotten to 50 seats potentially from the 44. That's not to mention what if you and I looked it up, Ryan, we could have found a bunch more. So I'm sure.
Gotta win those.
Yeah. So you're now taking over a local party, and you're in a county where the Democrats are the majority party and have done well, but you have also seen Republicans make gains in parts of your county, and it is the state capital. It's very symbolic. It's also a place where you have a growing Republican activist base and people connected with state government that live in Tallahassee who are active Republicans.
Yeah, you definitely do. Before this period, just let's say the last couple cycles, Republicans that were connected to the state government apparatus really didn't bother because they intuited, I think correctly, that this community in Leon County and City of Tallahassee is, you know, two out of three voters are Democrats. And really the question is how many people are going to vote or not vote. Really not that many of those people are voting for Republicans just because that's the nature of voters here. And I think that some of the big money that's been thrown around in recent elections, including notably for David Bellamy, our opponent, she chamber recruited, Republican-oriented, nominal Democrat that Commissioner Matlow defeated in August this year. That was a lot of out-of-street money. He saw a lot of special interest money from people that are involved in the process, and I think that they had an interest recently. It's tangent interest in that lately, so that makes things a little bit more fun. You've seen things like really sophisticated 501c3 and 501c4 groups electioneering hardcore in these little municipal elections, which is interesting and definitely an artifact of the capital and all that, the power elite having a base here. So we'll see how it goes. They've had mixed success. They've lost the biggest ones that they kind of tried to pony up together and get in. I don't think they're going to have much more success than that, but we'll see coming up here. I'll definitely be, as Leon DEC chair, I'll be looking out and combating that stuff as well as I can and putting a good product out there on the ballot that Leon County Democrats can get excited about and want to go out and vote for, because I think if that's the mindset of the voters and there's high turnout and people are engaged, that's going to be positive for people on our side of the street.
Steve Sutherland represented Tallahassee for two terms, right, in the U.S. House, but generally Tallahassee has been represented by Democrats. Bill Grant switched parties in 1989. Pete Peterson wiped them out the next cycle in 1990. So that would be the only other exception. Now you're going to have the bulk of Tallahassee, granted Neil Dunn has had some of it for the last 6 years, but you're going to have all of Tallahassee now in a district represented by Neil Dunn from Panama City, which is very different than what you've had in the past, which is, as I've said, it's been mostly represented by Democrats, most recently Al Lawson, who's from Tallahassee, but in the past, even Alan Boyd, who's from Monticello, and Pete Peterson, who was from Marianna. They haven't been from population centers. Don Fuqua was from Calhoun County. He represented Tallahassee in Congress for 24 years, Democrat. But now you're going to have someone from Bay County, from Panama City, another population center, and a place that culturally is very different than Leon County representing you. And so I think that this is a real, from my vantage point, a real problem for Leon County and a big problem for Leon County Democrats.
Yeah, the way they sliced and diced Tallahassee through political districting and redistricting has been interesting. It's definitely been an obvious target for Republican map drawers in the last redistricting and as well as the most recent one. So it's been somewhat dramatic, you know, really having our having our community of interest divided and those political subdivision lines violated by different ever-changing maps over and over again. Is definitely not good when you're trying to put together a cohesive, coherent, well-organized polity. So, ultimately, you know, Tallahassee is pretty
it is a pretty politically cohesive group, and they'll express their will pretty well on the ballot box when they're asked to. But the districting has not been, the process has not been kind to the interests of Tallahassee voters.
Yeah, what's your long-term view of the idea that perhaps the Republicans really believe as you get the kind of sprawl that state capitals tend to have? Austin is a state capitals and mega states. So Columbus has gotten a lot bigger in the last 20 or 25 years, metropolitan Columbus, although it's become more Democratic. Maybe it also helps Democrats. But let's talk about this concept of sprawl and ever-expanding state government and it attracting people to places. Sacramento, Austin, Albany, Columbus, even Lansing to a certain extent are all examples of this in large states. Harrisburg also a little bit. It hasn't happened in Tallahassee.
Toronto, Canada.
Yeah.
Toronto, you had the Rob Ford suburbs outside of Toronto.
Yeah, so it hasn't really happened in Tallahassee yet outside of Southwood and Killarn, but I know it's a long-standing hope of the Republicans it would. And it's funny, they're ostensibly the anti-government party, although I don't think that's really the case anymore. But they seem to be they benefit from the largesse of government because maybe they attract all these new people to Leon County who could potentially flip the county. So is that something you're concerned about or something you're watching?
It's always something we'll keep an eye on. We've seen some of the sprawl and the push for more and more development, like north of I-10, even a new I-10 interchange that will kind of divide the community and push the center of gravity even closer and closer to the Georgia border. As I say, you know, closer to Georgia than it is to the airport. So that's always a concern. Obviously, you get the exurban kind of profile of voter there at times. But I think that no matter what, Tallahassee being what it is, Democrats will have strong majorities no matter the city limits. But it is an intriguing thing politically. I think that, you know, a lot of those suburban voters are kind of also people that will be turned off by extreme Republicans. So as they change, I think there's growth and drawback both. That's kind of
yeah. That's certainly what's happened in places like Austin and Sacramento. I mean, I mentioned those two capitals, and which are the only two states larger than Florida. Sacramento was a much more conservative area than other parts of California. But as the Republicans have become more extreme, those suburban areas and kind of classic state workers or people who might be lobbying the legislature or working in different special interest trade groups or whatever, you know, associations, they tend to then maybe they're lobbying Republicans, like this is the case in Austin, especially Republican controlled state, but then they'll vote Democratic. And so you mentioned I-10. This is interesting because Tallahassee was the largest city in the country without an interstate running through it until some annexations were made. Not without an interstate. That was Fresno. Without an expressway of any kind running through it, that was Tallahassee until annexations in the 1990s brought I-10 into the city limits. Now, as you mentioned, it's becoming more or less like a center main road in Tallahassee. I mean, as the center of gravity is shifting further and further north, what's that change like?
Well, that change is, first of all, you know, going to be heinously expensive from a local government point of view. So in my job as somebody who's involved with municipal growth policy and stuff at City Hall, it's always concerning. I want to make sure that the taxpayers are always getting the best deal possible and that we're not getting to a posture where we're just engaged in giving away resources to profitable developments for no public purpose. You know, that's one thing that we vigilantly guard against and try to brings people's attention. But in terms of the change in culture, change in lifestyles of people in Tallahassee and the possible change of political views there, yeah, it's something that remains to be seen. I mean, I still think that you're rooted in an urban core kind of mentality, people that like to live in a community. But, you know, as we see the suburbanization of lots of areas, Tampa, where I'm from, another great example, where you have different attitudes and more far-flung annexed in parts of the city limit that are going to reflect those votes, reflect those values in how they vote in municipal elections. So yeah, that's absolutely, I think that we're going to make our case to them, no matter what. I'm talking about as Democrats and as our project locally. We're always going to make our case to those Republicans, and I think most people agree with us on the merits. So and popular, and so there's some positive things that we have going for us as well, besides some of the challenges of changing demographic stuff in Florida and Tallahassee in particular.
Outstanding.
We'll manage it how it comes.
We're going to leave it here, and we will be back with you next week with another new Florida History Podcast.